We want to talk also only under the right conditions. Otherwise, we're not talking.
Trump further defines conditions for North Korea talks. It's Wednesday, February 28th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us, too, on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, South Korea seeks jail time for a former president. What's behind tense U.S.-Australian relations? How to find oil in contested waters? It's all on today's VOA Asia. A controversial North Korean general on Tuesday ended his visit to South Korea, part of a North Korean delegation sent to take part in the closing ceremonies of the Winter Olympic Games. Kim Jong-chol, suspected of masterminding 2010 attacks that killed dozens of South Koreans, reportedly twice indicated a willingness by Pyongyang to engage in dialogue with the United States. The U.S. has indicated talks must include the North's denuclearization. President Donald Trump, in remarks to the nation's governors on Monday at the White House, said the U.S. is prepared for dialogue.
We want to talk also only under the right conditions. Otherwise, we're not talking. You know, they've been talking for 25 years. Other presidents should have solved this problem long before I got here. And they've been talking for 25 years. And you know what happened? Nothing. The Clinton administration spent billions and billions of dollars. They gave them billions. They built things for them. They went out of their way, and the day after the agreement was signed, they continued with nuclear research. The Bush administration did nothing, both. The Obama administration wanted to do something. He told me it's the single biggest problem that this country has. But they didn't do anything. And it would have been much easier in those days than it is now. I think most people understand that. China's been good, but they haven't been great. China has really done more probably than they've ever done because of my relationship. We have a very good relationship. And Russia is behaving badly because Russia is sending in what China is taking out.
On Friday, the Trump administration unveiled tough new sanctions on the North over its nuclear and missile programs. Mr. Trump, in his remarks Monday, warned darkly of a phase two if the sanctions don't work. He said in a war, there would be a, quote, tremendous potential loss of lives. Henry Kazianis is director of defense studies at the Washington-based Center for the National Interest. VOA's Victor Beatty asked what Mr. Trump means by talking under the right conditions.
What that means is that the Trump administration, I think, has been signaling for a little while now that the only way that they are going to negotiate with North Korea is if the North Koreans are serious about denuclearization. There's been quite a few comments from Mike Pence and others that they're willing as an initial step to talk to the North Koreans, but that they're not going to give anything up for just the simple pleasure of talking with them. They want to move very quickly from, you know, talks and getting to know one another to negotiations over their nuclear program. I've heard from many White House officials at this point over the last week, week and a half or so, that they're willing to talk to the North Koreans, but if the talks don't move quickly to some sort of talk about denuclearization on the Korean Peninsula, they will walk away from those talks. That's what the president was referring to.
Mr. Trump, in speaking to the governors, praised China's President Xi Jinping for bolstering his country's sanctions against the North, but warned that Russia is, quote, behaving badly on the issue. Quote, Russia is sending in what China is taking out.
Well, the Russians have been caught on a few occasions now doing what are called ship-to-ship transfers of what we think is oil. There have been pictures that have been circulated on the Internet, quite a few open-source reports. That actually goes back to late December. And it actually, it's sort of strange, Russia has been one of the ones at the UN Security Council resolution that signed on for oil sanctions against North Korea. And it seems like Moscow is one of the ones that is actually violating the sanctions. We don't know if this is something that the Putin government has actually sanctioned or if this is independent Russian entities that are basically trying to make some fast profits, you know, cashing in where Beijing, you know, isn't selling them oil anymore. So these are some of the things we're going to have to find out. But that seems like what Trump was referring to.
Harry Kazianis said he believes South Korea views its role as facilitating talks that might eventually reach a stage where the North might make concessions on its nuclear program. He said there are still some weeks before the end of the Paralympics in South Korea and the resumption of joint U.S.-South Korean military exercises, and they will be crucial in determining how committed the North is to its latest charm offensive. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOANews.com. South Korea urges U.S. support for North Korea nuclear talks. U.S. cutting aid to Cambodia for recent democratic setbacks. Sri Lanka shops and mosque damaged in Buddhist-Muslim clash. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more will be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Stop by there when you can, and also visit our VOANews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. South Korean prosecutors are seeking a 30-year prison term for disgraced former President Park Geun-hye, who was impeached in 2016 and removed from office last year on corruption charges. The 66-year-old daughter of former dictator Park Chung-hee also faces tens of millions in fines. Park allegedly, in collusion with longtime friend Choi Soon-sil, took or was promised bribes from three South Korean companies in return for policy favors. She is also accused of coercing several large firms to donate to foundations controlled by Choi. The former president has denied wrongdoing. James Kim, research fellow at the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies, tells VOA the length of the recommended prison term is not surprising to him.
Over the past 2 weeks or so, the court has been leveling charges against other key individuals involved in this particular scandal. And one of those accused and convicted was Ms. Choi, who was sentenced to 25 years. So everybody knew and expected President Park to at least get the same amount of penalty in terms of number of years of prison sentence or even more. So this was not at all a big surprise. She's accused of engaging in bribery, using her position to get different companies and conglomerates to pay essentially a political donation to companies that Ms. Choi has been safekeeping for, supposedly, allegedly, for President Park in part.
Kim says the political journey of Park Geun-hye has had incredible heights, from winning election by more than a million votes in 2012 to the current prosecution against her.
It has been a roller coaster ride for Korean politics in Seoul here. A lot of people have watched this very closely. As you know, a large number of people turned out to protest against President Park to get the impeachment proceeding through for her to be removed from office. And that's exactly what happened last year and ushered in a new era with President Moon being elected several months earlier than was expected.
The case has brought to light cozy political ties that South Korea's top politicians have had with huge conglomerate companies, which James Kim says seems to continue to be a problem.
Ever since the early development years, when the state was integrally involved in nurturing these conglomerates, when there were developing companies during the 70s and the 60s, a lot of these companies have done well, but they've maintained that close tie throughout these years. And it's been very difficult for administrations from both the conservative and the progressive parties to break that tie.
Sentencing is expected within the month. James Kim said typically a former president is pardoned by a succeeding administration, but President Moon Jae-in has indicated he will not use his powers to pardon Park. You've reached Wednesday, and we're glad that you're here with us on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull met this past weekend at the White House here in Washington. It was a very short meeting amid tensions between the two leaders on a few key issues, including dealing with China. VOA Asia's Ira Melman discussed these points in depth with Josh Kurlansik, Senior Fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations.
China and Australia are really close economic partners, and that's probably not unlikely to change. There are problems in terms of Australian intelligence and security concerns about Chinese purchases of some potentially security-sensitive companies. There are concerns about the opaque structure and corporate governance of some Chinese companies that have made investments in Australia, but the trade relationship is enormous, and it's going to continue to be so. More what the concern about is in the Australian security and intelligence community is that Chinese government is pursuing an approach of wielding more than just soft power, where you just try to sort of shape people's views, but actively trying to wield influence within Australian politics in ways that probably they shouldn't, which is why Australia has drafted new laws on foreign funding and similar to the Foreign Agents Registration Act that we have here. In terms of the other broader aspects, Turnbull is a conservative in the sort of Australian sense, but his views on many, many issues are still considerably to the left of what a conservative in the United States would be. So there's not going to be much discussion of many of the issues that sort of animate domestic politics in the United States, simply because they're not even that relevant in Australia. But I wouldn't be surprised if Trump continues to be upset about the fact that the U.S. has agreed to take a certain number of refugees from a third country that Australia is trying to resettle them from. Australia is engaging in a very substantial intra-Australian debate in the public and in politics there about really the long-term future of Australia's relationship with the U.S. and whether it can continue that and its closer relationship with China. And so it would be interesting to watch how that plays out in this visit and played out in this visit and in the future. Trump has sort of accelerated this discussion in Australian policy circles about whether Australia should be less dependent on the U.S.
Josh Kurlancic, Senior Fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news alert from VOA Asia: authorities in China have launched an intense crackdown on online commentary in the wake of a proposal by the country's Communist Party leaders to amend the constitution and scrap a two-term limit on the president's time in office. A wide range of phrases in Chinese have been banned to silence public debate. Freely available is VOA Asia Facebook. This story and more you'll find there. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a South Korean firm's uncontested discovery of oil in a sea where six other governments vie for sovereignty shows how outsiders harvest maritime resources without adding to decades of political friction. South Korean petroleum refining company SK Innovation Company said last week it had found crude oil at a Chinese tract in the South China Sea. Its case shows that firms from countries with no political stake in the resource-rich South China Sea can find oil and natural gas by contracting with one of the claimants' governments. Analysts like Oh Sun, international studies instructor at Singapore Nanyang University, say those governments normally rent out blocks in their 370-kilometer-wide exclusive economic zones rather than further out at sea where conflict is more likely.
This is not uncommon, but of course, whenever there is a discovery, people would raise their eyebrows, especially nowadays. These various claims to South China Sea territories and seabeds has been intensifying.
Six governments claim the 3.5 million square kilometer sea that stretches from Taiwan to Singapore. They are Brunei, China, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam. Their disputes rest partly on control of undersea oil and gas. The U.S. Energy Information Agency estimates 11 billion barrels worth of oil under the sea exist, along with 190 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. Alan Chong, associate professor at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore, says countries with South China Sea claims are quietly setting aside politics to make the most of a globalized oil economy, sometimes through joint ventures.
The complicity is just tangled. You know, indirectly, someone benefits along the way, even though officially the government will be at loggerheads. Much as the governments are officially drawing the line around recognizing Chinese claims, privately, I think they've just closed an eye to all these subterranean corporate linkages.
He and other analysts say most fuel exploration contracts involving outside companies take place when a claimant country offers a block of the ocean to outside bids. They add that oil companies may not mind the political risk as they're used to projects in the politically volatile Middle East. Their main fear is the prospect of finding no fuel under the sea after spending billions of dollars. Our thanks to Ralph Jennings in Taipei. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud online, as well as streaming each day on VOA Asia Facebook and our website at voanews.com. You'll find us, too, on the radio if you happen to be out and about around Asia. How about Thailand? PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University. Thanks to everyone there listening today. Our thanks, as always, go to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.